You're listening to the audio message of the Sunday service of The Gathering QC, a local church that meets at 3928 12th Avenue in Moline, Illinois. You can also find us on the web at thegatheringqc.com.
Bodies, we see counselors for emotional health, but another aspect of care that we often forget or we push aside is the care of our souls. So today, we have the opportunity to see what God's Word says about this very thing. So we're going to jump right into the Word this morning. We're going to read a very familiar verse, Psalm 119, 105 through 108. This is a verse that if you've been in church as a child, that I learned this when I was a child. It says, "Your Word is a lamp for my feet, a light on my path. I have taken an oath and confirmed it, that I will follow your righteous laws. I have suffered much. Preserve my life, Lord, according to your word. Accept, Lord, the willing praise of my mouth and teach me your laws." The psalmist is devoted to God. This verse refers to bringing perspective and hope to the psalmist when they're in a dark place. And the psalmist's devotion to God comes from within his being. It's not something that he is doing, but it is something that he is feeling, something that is internal within him. And he knows that he can trust his God deep within his soul. Psalm 23:1-3, we often hear this passage at funerals. We're going to talk a little bit more about that. But Psalm 23, "The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. He guides me along the paths for his name's sake. Guides me along the right paths for his name's sake." Psalm 23 is not just for funerals. We as pastors, we use it a lot because it's been a favorite for many generations because it does express the assurance of God's presence in our lives, and especially in times of grief or in times of adversity. It's a beautiful psalm, and its analogy of the Lord being our shepherd and we his sheep is very, very insightful because, you know, sheep drink from still waters. They won't drink. They do not like drinking from moving waters. Now, they might drink anything. The water might be stagnant or it might not be good for them, but they want to drink from still waters. And the same is true for us, that we find God in the stillness of our lives, in the calm of our lives, not in the crazy times in our life. And yet another familiar verse, Psalm 46:10, "Be still and know that I am God." Can you say that with me, church? Be still and know that I am God. Way back when the world began, God knew in his infinite wisdom what you and I would need. God longs for intimacy with his children. He wants you to experience peace and joy that comes through him, not through other things in this world. He doesn't want other things taking his place. And that's where soul care comes in. How is your soul today? It's a question that we don't even say a lot. I think, too, that Christians, especially some of us, are really terrible when it comes to asking this question. How is your soul? Because let's be honest, if we're not asking the question, and if we're not asking others this question, it causes people to live in isolation. It causes you to live in isolation, and it causes the people around you to live in isolation. And the enemy loves this, because this is what he wants for the believer. And you know, not everyone does this poorly. Some people are pretty good with this. They have their friend groups, and they care about one another, and they are asking the hard questions. But when asking this question, it's really okay to say, you know what? My soul's not good today. You know what? I'm lonely. Deep within me, I'm lonely. It's still okay to say, you know, my soul is pretty great. I feel so thankful. It's okay to be honest. It's okay to not be okay. And because isolation is a very dangerous thing, it's so important that we do ask those questions. And the reason it's uncomfortable is because we just don't ask it enough. We allow ourselves and those around us to just live life alone. John Ortberg, in his book, I'm not even going to remember the name of the book now, Soul Keeping. I didn't write that in my notes. John Ortberg describes the soul this way. "We each have an outer life and an inner one. My outer self is the public visible me. My accomplishment, my work, and my reputation lie there. But inside is my soul, the part of me that speaks in silence to others but yells at me. It's the inside stuff of real life. What is your soul saying to you? How is your soul? Is it connected to the breath of life, or is it deflated by the things of this world and self? My inner life is where my secret thoughts and hopes and wishes live. Because my inner life is invisible, it is easy to neglect. No one has direct access to it, so it wins no applause. Is your soul thriving or dying, or is it somewhere in between today? Your soul takes care and consideration to be healthy, and if you don't give it the attention that it needs, that's when you become dry, you feel dissatisfied, you go searching for that peace that you once had, but it is no longer there. Ortberg also talks about the outer life and the inner life that we just mentioned, that the outer life looks good most of the time. It's what we want everybody to see. It's mostly what we see on Facebook and Instagram, too. It's the part that we want everybody to see. It's what you're willing to share with people and allow them to know about you. But what happens in the inner life is messy. Those hidden things, those deep things that are deep within your soul, they're messy. And it's perhaps at times, too, that they're buried deep within, that sometimes you aren't even aware of what's going on deep inside your soul. You might just feel that you're sad. The inner life requires those private conversations and that soul searching so you can genuinely care for your soul and live out God's plan for your life, because he has so much for you. So how do you do this? You do it by identifying some things that may be a drain on you instead of benefiting your soul. You know, in your marriage, if you're married here, marriage takes work. And you know when your marriage is going well, and hopefully you know when your marriage is not doing well. But to have a good marriage, we put things into it. We work on it. When I talk to premarital and marital couples, there's one book that actually I learned about it from Tim Howard, and it's still one of my favorite all-time books on marriages, and it's called His Needs, Her Needs. It's a very practical book, and it works not only for marriages, but relationships of all. And this book talks about love units, that we have a love bank, and that when we do things in our marriage to serve one another, when we're kind, when we're looking out for one another, that we are depositing those love units into our bank or into our bucket. However, when we're not being kind, when we're arguing, when we're not paying attention to one another, we are actually taking those out. And so it is depleting the love bank or the bucket. And when the bucket is empty, guess what? Your marriage is in trouble. And this is the same thing with your soul. If you are not putting those things in the bucket in order to refresh you, to renew you, then you are left with emptiness, with dryness, with loneliness, and sometimes maybe even anger. So your soul is connected to God, and it's filled through by being connected with the Father. He wants you to experience peace. He wants you to experience joy, and he's the giver of those things. We try to find them other places, but he is the giver. And receiving these things requires soul care. So there's four topics I've chosen today that can be negative effects on your soul. Perhaps you will relate to one of them, or maybe all four of them. And if you are looking at your notes, you will see that there's only three there, because my apologies, one is missing. But when we get to that one, I'll let you know what it is. But the first topic that we're going to look at is comparison, comparing yourself to others. The temptation to compare is so common, but comparing yourself to others is either going to put you on top, or you're going to come up lacking. And so there's no win when it comes to comparison. It's really just a no-win situation. Comparison begins as children. I was fascinated because I didn't think of this my own self. I was reading about it. But comparison happens even as a child. When we look at our brother or sister or a friend that has that bigger piece of cake or that bigger piece of peanut butter sandwich, and we complain, Mom, but their piece is bigger than ours. And so it starts as early as a child, and we're not even realizing it. And James 3:16 says, where there is jealousy and selfish ambition exists, there will be disorder and every vile practice. When you don't measure up, it causes envy and jealousy. When you do measure up, it can lead us to pride and arrogance. You know, I have been there, you know, where it's like, well, they just tried hard enough. They could accomplish that. Well, if they just looked for a job better, longer, harder, they could find that job. Or if they wanted that promotion, if they just worked as long as I would, they would get that promotion. It leads to pride and arrogance. And we do that with our kids, too, because we compare, and so we want our kids to have the next best thing that all the other kids have. And so it can cause financial problems, and we make bad financial decisions because we're comparing, and it also messes with the ego. And so we just buy things that we can't afford. And so we do that because we fool ourselves in thinking we deserve it. Therefore, we justify the actions. But really, just trying to keep up with the friends and what they're doing. And when people get here, it's hard to ask for help. We just talked to someone recently that they said that they know someone in their small group, so a safe setting, that reached out and asked for help for some complicated personal things in their life. And you know, this takes courage. It takes such bravery because it's really hard to bring someone to the front and say, you know what, I've made a mess of my life in this area. It can be embarrassing. It's private. You just don't want to talk about it. But you know, when you do talk about it, it causes the rest of us for you to step into our mess, because at some point, we all have messes. It may not be the same kind of mess that you're in, but we can step into each other's messes and we can understand, because we have all been there at some point. So you know, it's easy just to say, life is messy, so join us. Dwayne talked about that church last week, about the church that invited the messy people to join us, because that is what the church is for. So next time that you're thinking of comparing, especially this week, be aware of that trap and see how many times you can find yourself doing this in this next week. And then keep 1 Corinthians 13:4 handy that says, love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant. And see that verse too. It's not just for weddings. It's for everyday use, not just for weddings. And the second one is seeking approval of others. I speak from experience, and my husband can too. That I struggled with this affliction for many, many years. And I see some people smiling that know me, because I am so much better than I used to be. This used to be a big deal. And I still struggle with it a little bit, we're going to be honest, but it's nothing like it used to be, because I really began to seek God because I wanted his approval above anything else. I needed God's approval. I needed my Father's approval, not everyone that was around me. And then also, too, for people that you struggle with, the seeking the approval of others, you have to remember that making the right decision is not always the popular decision. That can be hard. But the right decision is not always popular. And as we heard last week in 2 and 3 John, it's always speaking the truth in love. Plus, when you're making decisions to please everyone around you, it's very draining. It's exhausting. And people pleasers turn into yes people. They're saying yes to everything, and then you lose yourself. You don't even know who you are anymore because you're trying to please everyone that's around you. So there's something beautiful about finding your voice and being you and focusing and seeking on God and celebrating who you are in Jesus Christ. And the third one that is missing from your sheet is digital and technical addiction. Digital and technical addiction. I have to admit, when I wrote this down, I really felt like I'm just going right to meddling today in all of the lives here, because I think it will probably affect about at least 80% of us in here. And so this is a big deal in our society today. 20 years ago, I would never have thought that our phones and computers and tablets and video games would cause stress and anxiety in young people and old people, that it causes stress. Just was listening to a show a few weeks ago, how Facebook and maybe Instagram, they are looking to hide the likes on Facebook because it is causing emotional stress in middle schoolers, because they see how many likes that their friends get. And when they don't get that many likes, it is causing emotional issues within them. And so this is a big deal. And so you feel panic when you can't find your phone at home, especially when that's all we have, our cell phones now, and so we feel panic when we can't find them. And if you're like Dwayne and me, you're watching TV, and then he has his computer on his lap and his phone to his right. I'm watching TV, and I don't use my computer unless I'm working on a big project, you know, like this today. Otherwise, I'm doing everything on my phone, and he's saying, why are you using your phone? That's why your eyes are so blurry, because you're on your phone all the time. And so we have all of these things at our fingertips, and it's really difficult even to not look at any of it and just relax. Maybe even watch a TV show. Maybe even have a conversation with one another without grabbing it. And so last Sunday, I forgot my phone on accident, and I didn't have it. I told someone when I walked in that I forgot my phone, and I didn't have it until 4:30 that afternoon after we finished up with membership class, and it was nice. I didn't miss it. It was really, really nice. But I just thought it was so important that one of these things, electronics, they cause anxiety, stress, marital issues, and they can be addictive. And lastly, we want to talk about toxic thoughts. Toxic thoughts negatively affect your life, and it negatively affects your relationships. Some of these can be negative thoughts. They can be fearful thoughts, discontent thoughts, and critical thoughts. You may be struggling in one or more of these areas. Do you find yourself seeing the negative side of things more than the positive? Are you a glass half empty type of person? Do you like to play the devil's advocate in too many of the conversations that you have? How about with fear? Do you struggle with fear within your own life or your families? Fear is the most common thought that Satan uses against the believer. And the fearful thoughts are usually unrealistic. When you think back, they're usually very unrealistic thoughts, but they seem so real in your mind when you're thinking them. But usually they're unrealistic, but yet they can be paralyzing, and they seem so real. Fear can take you captive very quickly. And so it's necessary for us to be able to capture that, to be aware of it, and bring it to the Lord. And then there's the thought and feeling of being discontent. Discontentment is a lousy place to be, and it usually wants to bring others down with it. It causes folks to be sad and lonely, and discontent causes unhappiness, causes loneliness, hopelessness, and disappointment in people's lives. And then, lastly, there's critical thoughts. Critical thoughts produces a critical spirit. A critical spirit can cause harm to yourself and to those around you. It's not only dangerous to you, but it's dangerous to those to whom you speak, because our words are powerful. And it also will produce griping and complaining. Nothing ever seems to be good enough when you find yourself having a critical spirit. And the thing about the toxic thoughts is that others around you may notice this before you do sometimes. Perhaps not all the time, but maybe. That friend circle that we were talking about that you hang with, maybe those are the people that say, you know what, because they can do it lovingly, hopefully, that they can say, you know what, maybe we need to pray. Is there something going on with you? And let's just pray and take this to the Lord. And so it is very, very common because, as I said before, your thoughts really do matter. Your thoughts determine who you become. And your thoughts can hold you captive, which makes it harder to focus on God and his truth. Is exactly what the enemy wants. And the inner thoughts in an area in your life can also be kept very secret, like Ortberg was talking. Some might never manifest itself, but they're very secret and deep, and you can't tell anyone because you feel like it would just be horrible, that you just can't share this. And because of that, it becomes more poisonous within your life. And so your thoughts matter. And you may have already identified some of the negative thoughts that we're talking about here today, or maybe there's other things that as you sit here listening to God's word, that the Holy Spirit is bringing things in your mind of what the things that you need to pay attention to so you can be aware. Acknowledge how the thoughts are affecting you mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. It's a spiritual battle that requires God's help. You can't do it on your own most of the time, because it's a spiritual battle. So you need God's help. Now, the beautiful thing is that God is bigger than the toxic thoughts that hold you captive. He's bigger than the digital addiction. He's bigger than wanting the approval of others more than him. And he's bigger than the comparison trap as well. God is bigger than all of it. Because we fight not against flesh and blood, but against the principalities of this world. Not against flesh and blood. Romans 12, 1 and 2 says, therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the patterns of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. By the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. This is a verse that I love. Because if you know our story with our son Taylor, and he has shared it here, therefore I can make mention of it today. This is a verse that I prayed over and over and over again for Taylor and for our family. And you know what? God is able to do it. He is able to renew as we run to him. And as I said, if you don't struggle with some of these things, perhaps God is bringing those. And he's speaking to you this morning that he can help you with some of these things. You can experience renewal today because of the God that we serve. I'm going to ask the team to come forward. We have a little bit more to go, but they're just going to play softly. I wanted to read an excerpt from a book that I found, and it's called The Disquieted Soul. We inhabit a world of disquieted souls, living lives of restless discontent. They are the souls who overanalyze, overworry, overperform, and overprotect. They are the souls running as fast as they can, trying to escape their own unhappiness. Perfectionistic extremes and addictive tendencies are their regular companions. Peace, stability, and harmony are not. We can do better than incessant disquiet. We can know more balance and tranquility, even in the midst of life's demands. We can trace through life's high and low tides while remaining increasingly stable in their midst. We can increasingly live within the disharmony of life without being enslaved to that disharmony. Through the process of discovery and deliverance, we can learn, we can relearn to quiet our souls. And the author, when he wrote that, the sentence that caught my eye too is that we can learn and we can relearn and we can relearn and we can relearn. Because we have a God who loves us so much. And that's what he wants. He wants us to just continue to relearn it so he can have deep relationship with us. Philippians 4:8 says, finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, dwell on these things or think on these things. Again, it's a place of being. It's not a place of doing. So be still and know that I am God. You'll find God in the stillness. Ask him, what are the things that are stealing your joy? Step away from the TV, perhaps, and all of the electronic devices. Maybe do an electronic fast. If you love nature, take a walk. Experience nature and take a walk with your Father. Just talk with him and be with him. Maybe your soul means digging into the Word, that you are going to have a serious Bible study, digging into it, because that fulfills you and it brings you closer to God. So do it. Perhaps it's worship music that brings you into the presence of God. It ushers you in. I know it does for me. And so do that. Take time for that. Experience God in this way. It's so simple, but yet they're so profound, because all it takes is being still and coming to the Father with an honest heart and an open heart. Ortberg also says this, for the soul to be well, it needs to be with God. One of the most intriguing phrases in the Bible, he says, is where Adam and Eve heard the sound of the Lord God as he was walking in the garden. In the cool of the day it was, and God is spirit, which means he doesn't have a body, he doesn't have legs or feet. What does it sound like when God goes for a walk? The point of this remarkable phrase is that walking is something you do with someone that you care about, a friend with a friend, a child with a parent, two people in love would go for a walk, but it's not really about the walk. It's about being with someone. The God of the Bible is a God who wants to be with you. Our souls were made to walk with God. He longs for it today, church. So whatever draws you to the heart of God, do it. Experience renewal of your soul and do whatever it takes. Will you pray with me?